three astonishing cases. Three cases jumped out at me when I read this book. In the first example, a videotape from Florida was submitted anonymously to a TV station in 1996. Several investigators explored this case, including psychiatrist John Carpenter, physical scientist Ted Phillips, criminologist Dr. William Schneid, and Dan Ahrens, a computer analysis expert, most of whom worked for the Mutual UFO Network, MUFON. They all felt this was a genuine video recording of something that really happened and could not have been a hoax. The tape was from the security camera footage of a small factory in Florida, showing multiple camera feeds all together. In one frame, at 11:16 p.m., a worker walks toward the rear gate, apparently to look at something. A fuzzy white glow arrives in the area where the man is standing, while electromagnetic interference briefly disrupts the picture. The glow lasts a few seconds, and when it goes away, the cameras are all working normally, but the man has disappeared. When the film was analyzed one frame at a time, the man is seen to vanish almost instantly. The glow came back at 1:06 a.m., after a search for the man had found nothing. The factory lights all went out, and the man was again seen within the light in only a fraction of a second. He was now in distress, on all fours, and began throwing up. The security guard rushed out to help him, but he could remember nothing of what happened. He had lost those 2 hours. He went home in shock, said he was too sick to work the next day, and never returned to the factory. The second case is very intriguing. A man named Bernard from the north of England reported a bizarre incident that occurred in Pennines, UK, on a hill east of Manchester in the summer of 1942 while he was a child. Later on, he was concerned about reporting this case, as he was happily married and had risen to a prominent level in his work as a nurse. He described his experience to several psychologists at work, but no one could explain what had happened to him. On that day in 1942, he and a female friend felt a sudden, overwhelming sense of calm and quiet on the hill. They felt like their minds were drifting off. They sat by a tree and enjoyed the strange sense of deep relaxation. Gradually, they began hearing two voices. And when they sat up to see what was going on, two men were now standing over them, discussing their observations as if they did not expect the children to be able to hear them. One man said, "Here they are." The other man held some sort of device in his hand and kept reading off numbers from it. The men were discussing time as if it were a landscape that you could navigate through. And they occasionally paused to say something positive about the children. The two men were entirely human-looking and were wearing unusual bright suits that looked synthetic, totally out of place for wartime Britain. Eventually, the two men started talking to the children directly and described events that were going to happen in their lives as if they had already happened. When Bernard asked them who they were and where they were from, one of them smiled, looked up at the sky, and said, "From a long way away." They also told the children not to say anything, as it was a secret. When the children then went to the foot of the hill, they were greeted by a farmer who asked them who they were. When they told him their names, he said they should rush home as soon as possible. Once they arrived, their relatives had gathered and were very worried about them. The children felt like the experience had only lasted 2 hours, when in fact they had been gone for more than a day. Although they said they had been on the hill the whole time, it had been thoroughly searched, and no one could find them. The third and final case I want to discuss from Time Storms opens up a whole new area of investigation. It concerns an area on the M56 motorway in the UK between Doddleston and Altrincham, known as Helsby Hill, a quartz-rich outcropping of sandstone. a remarkable number of unusual events have occurred in this area, including green glows, curtains of light, poltergeists, missing time, car blackouts with spontaneous travel through time and space, an odd white powder scattered on the ground after a white glow and high-pitched humming noise filled the area, as well as the disappearance of a one-hour block of time. And there were also six other cases of glowing lights with similar distortions of time and space. A woman who was driving on the slip road off the M56 between Preston Brook and Daresbury lost 6 hours of time in March 1988 after seeing a glow overhead. 3 months later, Randall's discovered that at the exact same time this six-hour time slip happened, two TV reporters, Steve Winstanley and Fred Talbot, were filming a local news story about canal barges when they heard a strange noise. Then, to their amazement, two tin cans rose up off the boat, hovered for a short time, and then fell into the water. They were actually passing under the very same vortex where the other time slip case had just occurred. The owner of the land, Bill Whitlow, described many cases of people hearing strange noises in the canal, which created the legend that it was haunted. Then, in August 1990, a crop circle appeared on Whitlow's land within 100 yards of where the previous event had occurred 2 years earlier. Witnesses heard a high-pitched wailing noise on the night the circle appeared, and Randall's photographed it before Whitlow harvested the crop. Then, while she stood there taking photographs, a car lost control on the road. The driver claimed he was pulled across the road toward the field, even though he could not see the crop circle. Police could find nothing wrong with his car, even though he felt it was from a flat tire, and no evidence of dangerous driving. Sadly, Randall's parents had parked their brand new car off the side of the road, and this stray car slammed into them, causing serious injury to Randall's mother, who had to be cut free from the wreckage. Other events occurred in the same area since this time. Crop circles and mystical beings. That brings us to the mystery of crop circles, which have been reported since at least AD 815, when Agobard, the Archbishop of Lyon in France, had to issue a formal decree prohibiting the locals from taking crops out of circles that had formed in the fields. The locals wanted to use them for fertility rituals, probably because of the exceptional energetic effects they felt from them. The farmers were clearly upset by this loss. The interesting part about this story is that Agobard never denied the circles existed. He only went after the townspeople because they were removing all the crops inside of them. In his book, Dimensions, Jacques Vallée draws from a 9th century French text that gives further detail behind this story. Supposedly, three men and a woman were witnessed emerging from aerial ships that were powered by beings called sylphs, who showed them many great wonders. They were told the human-looking beings came from Magonia. The fearful locals turned on them and felt they were now evil magicians. The witnesses were about to be burned alive when Agobard saved their lives by denying that sylphs existed, as well as the idea that anyone could be a magician. Agobard's written notes from the event reveal the same level of sarcasm we would come to expect from skeptics 1,200 years later. We have seen and heard many men plunged in such great stupidity, sunk in such depths of folly, as to believe that there is a certain region, which they call Magonia, whence ships sail in the clouds in order to carry back to that region those fruits of the earth which are destroyed by hail and tempests. In Richard Thompson's epic research work, Alien Identities, Ancient Insights into Modern UFO Phenomena, we hear about the traditional European legends of fairy rings, which appear to be crop circles. In these legends, however, these are not merely interesting patterns in the crops. They also feature direct portals into time-space. In one traditional Celtic story, a hero named Ossian was enticed into a mystical land by a beautiful fairy princess. He married her and spent 300 years living in the mystical land of Tir na n'Og. When he eventually felt like he wanted to return to Ireland, he traveled back on the same horse, and his wife warned him not to ever set foot on the ground. All of his friends had long since passed away once he came back, and the country seemed quite different. He eventually had an incident that caused him to get off of his horse and touch the ground, and he immediately turned into a blind and feeble old man. In another case from the early 1800s, two farm workers named Rhys and Llewellyn were walking home in the Vale of Neath, Wales. Rhys heard strange music along the way and decided to stay back and explore it, but Llewellyn couldn't hear anything. Rhys never returned, and Llewellyn was thrown in jail on suspicion of murder after an investigation. 2 weeks later, a man familiar with fairy legends felt there might be an explanation. He advised them to return to the area where Rhys was last seen and look for a fairy ring. Indeed, Llewellyn found such a circle in the grass, and when his foot touched the circle, he could hear the music of harps. As each man in the party put his foot on Llewellyn's, they were all able to hear the music, and they saw a variety of short, but otherwise human-looking people dancing in a circle. Rhys was dancing with these little people at his normal height, and Llewellyn pulled him out. Rhys then said he'd only been in there for 5 minutes, but when he found out how long he had apparently been missing, he went into a depression, took on an illness, and soon passed away. Thompson went into detail about this parallel reality in Celtic lore. The other world of the Celts has various names, such as Avalon, Tir na n'Og, Land of Youth, and Plain of Delight. Examination of the stories makes it clear that this realm would have to exist in a higher dimension. To reach it, one must go to the right place in three-dimensional space, and then one must travel in a mystical fashion that we do not understand. At least not until now. Thompson also notes that the harvest of grain was often associated with fairies, and pulls a quote from Robert Rickard, who says, "Throughout the range of Indo-European cultures, the fairies were given their tithes of corn and milk at harvesting, over which they presided." This raises the possibility that some people actually live in this parallel reality of time-space as their normal existence, rather than here in space-time, and may well have their own traditions and customs. Over time, these reports have become mythologized, and the stories get stranger and stranger, but there may well be a seed of truth in them.